I was a smoker.
Here he is.
Appreciate it. Everybody, my name is Walker. I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is August 1st of 2020. I was one of those COVID pandemic people who, needless to say, hit bottom pretty good during the beginning and didn't have much of a choice but to get sober. So I guess a little bit about what it was like for me and what happened and what it's like now. So I grew up in Eatonton, Georgia, which is Putnam County, not too far down the road, a little small town, not a whole lot going on. And from a young age, I was always very, very competitive. All right? Like, I was addicted to competition, whether it was tying my shoes, like in preschool, I had to be the first one to do it and show everybody that I knew how to do a double knot and all that stuff. In T-ball, when they didn't keep score, I'd like to keep a little score in the dirt just to make sure that everybody knew that we won, and if we lost, I'd like kick it and cover it so nobody knew that we lost. But I always had to win. It was like that in school with grades and stuff like that. I was always wanting to win. You know, first one to be done with the test. First one, all that. Needless to say, that caused a lot of anxiety. You know, I didn't realize what all was going on at the time. I remember before kindergarten, we had to take our first standardized tests. Right? You know, you get the number two pencil and the little bubble sheet and all that stuff. My dad told me this one counted. Right? I had to do good. And I remember him having to come up to the school because I had stomach cramps so bad. And I didn't know why I had stomach cramps. I just knew that it hurt. Looking back on it, it was right because I was a little anxious. And stuff like that continued all through elementary school to the point that I had a spot in the teacher's lounge on a couch that if my stomach got the cramping too bad, I could go in and lay down. This was, you know, first, second, third, this was through probably fourth, fifth grade. I even came up here and went to Eggleston to the children's hospital because I kept having stomach problems. And they came back with, he has a nervous stomach, right? Which I didn't understand because I didn't feel nervous. I guess until I got sober and looking back on all this stuff, I could, you know, I had a lot of fear and things like that. But looking back, I had a need for validation from other people. Right? I wasn't enough for myself, so I needed external validation. And that was where my competition came in. I needed people to tell me that I was smart enough and to tell me that I was good enough. I still to this day struggle with a fear of not being good enough. And what I would do is I would place what I thought your expectations were of me onto you and then try to live up to them. And they were always very high and I never quite could. And I followed that self-seeking validation all through high school. I got into sports. I played every sport that my high school offered except for golf. And that's because they wouldn't let me play golf at the same time as tennis, track, and baseball. I was a pretty athletic guy, and you know, I felt like I had found a group. I found a group that had similar interests, had a common goal. These were all positive things, right? Needless to say, those groups would change and those goals would change that were not quite as positive. My first time drinking, I was 15 years old. First time really drinking. I was 15 years old, and like I said, I was from Eatonton, so there weren't a lot of places to go. So we had a field party in Morgan County. And it was a big deal when the high school goes to another county, you know, for a field party. We had an ice house keg, and I had, at 15 years old, I had 15 ice house draft beers, full red solo cup, and had the time of my life. And if I remember correctly, I was the life of the party. I'm pretty sure that everybody felt the same way. There's a part of the doctor's opinion that I read that said men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. And I found that to be very true, starting with that first party. it ended up raining, which is the only reason why the party ended. And my buddy Fathead was driving. Well, we call him Fathead because he had a fat head. But we were driving home in the rain, and I remember I was throwing up out of the passenger seat, the side of his car, and it was so bad that we had to stop by the self-serve car wash in the rain, right, to wash the side of the car off. You would think that that might be enough to be like, you know what, maybe you shouldn't mess with this alcohol stuff. But I was alive. Right? I found that freedom. Right? You know, I'm 15, I'm drinking, all right? I'm good with, I'm very good with computers and Photoshop, so I made a little fake ID at 15, so I had the seniors in high school would drive me to the beer store because I couldn't drive, but I could buy beer. It's so funny how it works. And I was just free. Summers, you know, didn't have a lot of sports and things, so we'd go to downtown Milledgeville. You know, here I am, a freshman in high school, acting like a freshman in college, you know, sophomore, junior, whatever the case may be. And I truly felt free. Well, high school ends. You know, I spent a lot of that time in high school I could control my drinking. Because I had a fear of getting in trouble. I would miss sporting events. If you got caught drinking or anything like that, I mean, it was automatic. You were suspended for the season. So I was real careful. I didn't want to get caught. I learned that I kept a humidifier in my room because, you know, I had allergies. But that humidifier will hold a six-pack of Milwaukee's Best Ice. It can keep it cold, and your parents will never know the difference. So I'd always have to sneak and hide my drinking, which it turns out normal people don't do. Right? Normal people don't have to sneak and hide their drinking. They can just have one or two. But, you know, I wanted that effect. So fast forward, graduating high school, I go to college, to the University of Georgia, which is basically a training ground for alcoholics. But the thing is, there you go. But you know, the thing is now I didn't have that fear of really getting in trouble. Right? I didn't have my parents there to get on to me. Nobody was checking my curfew. I didn't even really have to go to class that often. There was nothing stopping me from really drinking. So I did. And I felt this little empty spot because I didn't have anybody really to run with. I didn't have a tribe. You know, I'd always had sports teams, and my class was real close and all that. And here I am in Georgia with, like, three high school buddies, and that's the only people I knew on the whole campus. So to fill that void, I joined a fraternity, right? Because that's a great idea for an alcoholic to join a fraternity where not only is drinking acceptable, it is glorified. I learned, even though it was a pretty wild time, I started to notice with the group, you know, we all had the common goal, good times, so and so, but I didn't exactly drink like all my friends did. Luckily, the fraternity was big enough that I had a group I could drink with, like, on Mondays and Tuesdays, and then there was a different group, like, on Wednesdays and Thursdays. So I could just kind of bounce around from group to group and kind of get lost in the shuffle because they were all little separate groups, but I had somebody to go out and party with all the time. And that was my tribe. The problem was that as we got older, some of these people started to do things that were responsible. Right? They continued to go to class, and they got these things called internships, and didn't go out. We used to call it running the gauntlet, where you went out Monday through Sunday. You know, you finish off Sunday at Sons of Italy, and then you ran the gauntlet. They quit doing all that kind of stuff, which blew my mind. So I started to lose that group. So as a good alcoholic, I go find some more alcoholics, and I start bartending for a living. And looking back, my group that I ran with and my world, all this freedom that alcohol had given me, I didn't see it at the time, but things slowly started closing in. So I went from actually being free to a smaller group in college, and then smaller subgroups of that college, and then And then the nightlife just added a whole new element, because then I'm completely surrounded by people with the exact same goals that I had, that were doing the exact same things I was, and they were doing just as much and just as bad as I was. So I didn't have to feel bad. You know, I didn't have to be like, oh no, I can't go out drinking till 6 in the morning today because they'll think less of me. No, it's a badge of honor. You know, so I was just another bozo on the bus, just in the negative way. And I was completely fine with that. And to be honest, the only reason why I left the bartending and the nightlife in Athens, I would like to say this because, you know, I decided that I needed to take my life in a better direction and sober up and be responsible. But I decided to get married. And that took me out of the bar life, and I was a little isolated. That was a time in my life that will say, turns out that there's other forms of alcohol that you can have. Some of them can come from doctors and stuff. I'll leave it at that. If you want to talk about it after the meeting, I'm more than happy to talk to you about it. Had a little period there, and that's where a lot of my hiding things and sneaking around and making up excuses, acting like I'm being of service. Oh, I don't mind going to get the ice, you know, and then sneaking to the beer store and grabbing some, you know, nice little tall boy. I could get down 2 24-ounce tall boys like in 2.5 miles. So I had to like distance. You know your alcohol too if you can figure out how much alcohol you can get down over a distance. Not even time period. Like, if I got 2.5 miles, all right, that's good for like 3 shots of tall boy, and I still got time to throw the bottle out the window without getting busted. So needless to say, with all that going on, the whole marriage thing did not work out very good, which, looking back on it, is probably the best thing that ever happened to me. So I go back to what I knew. You know, here I am back, not knowing what to do, so I'm going to go back to what I know. So I get back in the bar business, come back to Georgia. In fact, actually go back to Athens. And start back bartending in Athens. My group got even smaller. Here I am in my 30s, early 30s, in Athens, bartending in a college town. You know, I thought I could pull off the, like, grad student who hung around, like, maybe a year or two too long. But it turns out that I was, like, the creepy old guy. So the owners of the bar had a bar. I don't know if y'all are familiar with them around here, but it was the Buckhead Saloon right there in downtown Buckhead. So they moved me up there. And if I thought that Athens had some professionals, all right, this was a whole different ball game, and I was all about it. It was around this time that I found some nose beers. Right, so apparently found other ways you can find alcohol. It just kind of sped up a little rocket fuel for my alcoholism, because now I could drink as much as I wanted for as long as I wanted. Anytime I wanted to get back right, I'd start over again, and it was another just, I have found the solution. It's funny, looking back on it, I found a lot of little solutions that seemed to work pretty good until they didn't. And the problem is you never know when they don't. Until it's too late, and that was the problem. But this is when, you know, as if losing jobs and getting divorced and stuff wasn't bad enough. It's funny, I even wrote down here, and then the consequences started, as if I hadn't already lived through a bunch of consequences. So got a DUI. Well, an alleged DUI, we'll say. I actually ended up getting it lowered. It was my 2-year sobriety date by the time they finally got me back to court, and I got it lowered to reckless driving. So I actually had 2 years of sobriety on the day that I had to go back to court to take care of a DUI from 4.5 years before. I couldn't keep, if you can't keep a job bartending at a particular bar because they say your drinking is out of control, that probably should have been a sign that I had an alcohol problem too. I mean, when the pros of Buckhead are being like, hey, man, you got to slow down. find somewhere else to work. Take my talents where they're appreciated. Right across the street. Well, eventually those things ran out too. My relationships, and when I say relationships, I mean with all people. Family, totally gone. Never talked to them, avoided them, because I knew if they called, it was going to be to tell me how I'm messing up my life, and I'm not doing what I'm supposed to. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't want to hear it. I'm drinking, we'll have a good time. I got my life figured out. I'm doing okay. Looking back, I was not doing okay, not even remotely okay. But I was convinced at the time that I was doing okay. Family, my friends, that group that I was talking about kept getting smaller. You don't talk about getting real small. It got a lot smaller. Relationships, romantic relationships, throw those out the window too. And that freedom that I had, even geographically, slowly came in. It turns out after you get arrested for suspicion of DUI, you lose your license. So there goes driving, which didn't really bother me. I didn't even get my license back for like 2.5 years because I didn't need it. Because I could walk to all the bars I'd go to. I made my little square from the apartment. Having a license wouldn't have done anything but risk me getting in more trouble. And remember, I had a fear of getting in trouble, so I would just walk. And then the pandemic hit. All right. And I'd like to say that I had this fear that the end of the world was going to happen, so I drank by this fear. None of that's true. Looking back on it, the deal was, hey, man, you don't have to go to work. The liquor stores are open. You get to stay in your house all day and watch, reruns of NCIS and NCIS Los Angeles and NCIS New Orleans. And I'm pretty sure I got one in Hawaii now, but that wasn't out when I was still drinking. And I ended up just in this fantasy land. That was my escape, man. I was pretty convinced that I could have been like a CIA agent by the time I started to get sober in the pandemic. What's funny is everything was closed except for the liquor stores, right? And I may have died had it not been open, looking back on it. But needless to say, me and the people at the liquor store by the Goodwill on Roswell Road became good buddies. Because I was there every other day. I would get a liter of Tito's, I would get a liter of Jägermeister, and I would get a case of beer or a case of hard seltzers if I felt like hydrating. And that was what I did. It started off, it's funny, around this time of year, I get my little Facebook memories that pop up. And I've got pictures of all these fun, nice, fruity, frozen cocktails that I made during the pandemic. And really just an excuse to seem more socially acceptable so that I could just start getting trashed a little earlier, And the drinking just continued. And it got to be where, I'll wait till lunch. And then it got to be like, feel a little bad, so I'll have one in the morning, just a little hair of the dog. And I remember it got bad enough that we had a glass bar cart, and I could wake up at like 2 in the morning and have to go to the bathroom or something, and I could keep my eyes closed, go over to the bar cart, and I could feel where the Tito's was. And I'd twist the top off, and I'd take a swig, put it back down, and I'd slide my pinky under the bottle and set it back down on the glass so that it didn't make noise, and then slide it over so I didn't wake anybody up. So that I wouldn't get busted. You would think that these would all let you know you have a serious drinking problem, too, and you probably should get help, but that did not happen that way. So they start opening back restaurants and bars, and the last place that I was working, I go back and I'm drinking. I'm not feeling good. I'm feeling depressed, gaining a little weight, pandemic pounds, if you will. So I go to the doctor because I'm depressed. And as soon as I walk in, the doctor says, "Why are you here?" And I said, "Well, doc, I feel depressed." And he said, "Well, you do realize that alcohol is the biggest depressant that a person can take." And I'm like, "Yeah, but that's not why I'm here, doc. I'm here because I'm depressed." I was yellow. I had brittle fingernails. I had taken 2 shots of vodka in the parking lot because my hand was shaking so bad that I couldn't fill out the paperwork. he suggested that I take a liver enzyme test. So I did, begrudgingly. And I should have known when I got a phone call at 8 o'clock the next morning that it probably wasn't very good. And he told me that I had the highest liver enzyme count that he'd had on the test at his personal practice, other than when he worked at the ER at Grady, that he'd seen. And I asked him if I got a plaque for that, and he did not laugh or think that it was funny. So, you know what? I got this. Apparently, I need to quit drinking. Right? He told me if I quit drinking, my liver should have time to get back better. You know, I'll be okay. If not, I'm going to have irreversible cirrhosis of the liver, and I will die an alcoholic death. Okay? No brainer. I'm just going to quit drinking. Well, I did. It took me 14 days to taper. Luckily, I had somebody there with me to count out and do pour out shots. And the first day, I took enough to where I wasn't shaking too bad, and it was like 15. And the next day, it was like, you know, 13. I kind of tapered down. By the time I was down to the 6s and 7s, I was shaking so bad I couldn't even take the shot. But I got it down, got to 0. I had quit drinking. All right, I told all y'all I wasn't an alcoholic. All right, I could control it. I could quit when I wanted to. Take that, Dad. You know, and I was living life. All right, well, I went from looking like Bart Simpson to like a normal color. I could bend over and tie my shoes without getting winded. Like I could go outside and do hikes. I was feeling good, looking good, you know, working good. It turns out I was that boy that was whistling in the dark, all right? I was, you know, I had it all figured out. And then I go back to work, and I was working at Tin Lizzie's. I was serving slash bartending, and there was nobody there. It's funny, both the places I worked, the last two burned down, and I had nothing to do with it whatsoever. I really didn't. I was sober. And I go behind the bar, and there was nobody looking. And I had always been able to justify my drinking. I, so-and-so was mean to me. The boss made me do this. You know, rah, 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 rah. Poor me, poor me. This time, I had no excuse. Nothing. And I even remember, I'm getting chills talking about it. I remember telling myself, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. And I flipped that little bottle up. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. And I put it in my mouth and said, don't do it. And I took a swallow and felt all that warmth. And I'm like, what did you just do? And it was at that moment, I didn't know what step one was. But at that moment, I knew that I was powerless over alcohol. I didn't know exactly how to put it into words. And I would like to say that at that moment, I got sober and decided that was enough. But it wasn't. I went a few more weeks. Got in trouble again at work, got in trouble where I was living, and I ended up back in Eatonton, Georgia at 36 years old on my parents' couch, stealing Miller Lights and red wine and still trying to convince myself that my life was manageable. All right, I was trying to come up with one more scheme, all right, that I can get out of this thing and then everything will be okay because I'm going to quit drinking and everything will be okay. Just let me have this drink while I think about how I'm going to do it. And my uncle, who had been in the program, another 12-step fellowship, called a friend of his who was in AA, and he called me, and I just, for some reason, hearing this guy talk about being an alcoholic, it was different than hearing it from a doctor. It was different than hearing it from my mom, and it was different from hearing it from my sister, who probably should be in Al-Anon. You know, why don't you just quit? Why don't you just quit? Yada, yada. You know, all that stuff. This guy told me what it was like for him, and I totally understood. He goes, hey, man. He said, why don't you just try something different? He's like, your uncle's got a rehab lined up for you. Why don't you just try something different? He said, in fact, if you don't like it, I promise you, you can always go back to your mama's couch. And for some reason, it stuck. That time, I'm like, you know what? I'll go. And I was like, all right, so when are we going? You know, Tuesday or Wednesday? And they go, no, you're going in the morning. But I've got to prepare. I've got so much stuff to do. No, and I didn't have squat. So I went. And, you know, I'd like to say that there was some, you know, I just had this miraculous automatic moment in rehab. A lot of people had some serious spiritual experiences in rehab. They didn't want to work any type of program or anything. They just thought, hey, you know, I quit drinking, I'm excited, everything's good. And I had quite a few that left when I first got there, you know, because they had graduated. And before I was done, they had been right back. And I said I didn't want to be one of those guys. So my ego, which I've learned since is a bad thing, but my ego kept me sober early on. I remember him telling me in the rehab joint that that like there's less than 10% had a chance of staying sober a year. And I'm like, mark me down. Right. I sat in the back. I took notes. I've got a binder. I mean, I took more notes in rehab than I did in college by far. Just because I was going to prove to them that I was going to make it a year. But what rehab really did for me was it broke that Groundhog Day. My life had become a Groundhog Day. I was doing the same thing over and over and over again. And I got out. And they told me that I needed to hit 90 meetings in 90 days. And I was so afraid that if I didn't hit 90 meetings in 90 days, I was like going to magically get struck drunk. So I did. I probably did 100 and something meetings in 90 days. And the problem is some of the meetings I would go to were still closed because of the pandemic. So then I would do Zoom meetings. So I was trying to go to a meeting, and then at night I would watch Zoom meetings just so I could add some in reserve in case like I missed a day so I could make sure I still had my 90. But while I was doing all that, things started to kind of change. I was actually working and thinking about my recovery, and some of the things that I started to hear in these rooms started to make sense. I was hearing people talk about feelings that I had, problems that I had, some of them worse. And here they are laughing, and they're happy, and they're excited. And enjoying life. I'm sitting there thinking, well, how can an alcoholic just be enjoying life and in the AA meeting? Like, I'm stuck here having to go to these things so I can stay sober. So I got a sponsor. Because I was also told I was supposed to be a sponsor. I'll never forget, we met at the OK Cafe over there in Buckhead. And to this day, I think back on that meeting and I feel like I was hungover. Like, I hadn't had a drink in 45-day rehab, probably 50 days. But I felt hungover looking back. And it was just, I was emotionally hungover, beat down, emotionally, spiritually, the whole night, physically, because I'd eaten a bunch of rehab food and pastries and picked up about 40 pounds. I mean, I was not in good shape, but I knew I didn't want to drink. And I remember him saying, are you willing to go to any lengths to your sobriety? I'm like, yeah, for sure. And he took me through the steps. And, you know, step one, I had my powerless moment. I mean, I knew that at that moment I was powerless over alcohol. I didn't realize that AA was going to give me power back. But I knew that if I drank, that obsession would kick in. The allergy, whatever you want to call it, I'm just wired a little different. All right. The craving, obsession, all that stuff would kick in, and I would drink more. I never liked having a beer. I mean, who enjoys a drink? The few times I tried to quit, I used to just, if I had to choose between one or two and none, I would just take none and shake it off until I got home and could sneak some, because if I drank one or two and I was told I had to quit, ooh, buddy, I was miserable company. And I had to admit that my life was unmanageable. I mean, I literally just went from a couch to a rehab joint. Like, that's not very manageable. I like to think that it was at the time. It's funny how I could lower my standards to meet my behavior. But eventually, there's no more lowering. Like, that was my bottom. You know, step two. I kept trying to do the same things over and over. I kept thinking that if I just get a new job or I just make some more money, that I won't have to drink anymore. I'm going to be happy and everything's going to be good. The couple times that I tried to drink, I did the exact same things that I did. I just wasn't drinking because I was convinced that it was just alcohol that was the problem. But it turns out if I have all these same behaviors, I'm hanging around the same people, they're doing the exact same thing, there's a good chance that I'm going to be right back doing what I was doing. And I did, you know. The thought, you know, I hear it now all the time, and it takes me back. This time is going to be different, right? This time is the time. But then I would never do anything different except not drink and then wonder why I'm drinking again. You know, step three for me, I just had to believe in a power greater than myself. Because here's the deal, all right? Me being my greatest, highest power, just because I'd done well in elementary school on my little standardized test and all that, right? My way of handling my life got me to that couch, and it got me to the rehab joint, and it got me an AA, right? And it got me miserable, and it almost killed me. But these groups in here, y'all weren't drinking, right? And you were laughing, and you were smiling. Some of you were happy. And we're polite. The group as a whole had a lot more power than I did. You know, so instead of being the guy who knew it all, like I'd spent most of my life trying to blaze my own trail and be some trailblazer and all this, why don't I just follow what people before me, who were exactly where I was, has done and get where they are now? And that's exactly what I've done. Step four was when the action started. All right. Step four, when I started taking up personal inventory, I had a lot of realizations. I realized that I no longer was the victim. You know, I'd spent my whole life, the world had just totally screwed me over. All right. The bosses didn't realize how hard I was working. You know, the lottery didn't realize the numbers I picked it was supposed to hit. You know, all these things. But I started looking at these patterns, and it turns out that I played 99.9%, not 100%, but I played a large, large role in my life and where I was. And that was kind of hard to swallow because, you know, I was a smart guy, all that. And then step five, here I am talking to somebody else about it, thinking that, you know, it alternated between I'm just this terrible person. You know, I've done all this to all these people to like, oh, I'm some super alcoholic. This just, you know, this amazing caliber alcoholic who just drank and did all this crazy stuff. And I remember doing my fist up on a sponsor, and when we got done, he's like, all right, so that's it? You got anything else? I'm sitting there thinking like, am I supposed to make up stuff at this point to like impress this guy? You know, it turns out that I was just a normal run-of-the-mill alcoholic. And I actually found comfort in that. It was an amazing feeling. You know, step six, became entirely ready. I became entirely ready to start working on all those little defects that I found. And that doesn't mean that I'm magically going to have them disappear. But I actually started to put the correlation between the fact that all these little behaviors that I had that were causing all these problems, when I thought all these problems were causing me to drink. So it started to make sense that if I start to become a little better person and I start to work on these negative traits that I have and negative things, maybe I end up not drinking. You know, maybe my life will get a little bit better. And then humbly asking to remove our shortcomings, you know, that's exactly what I did. And it came from a place of humility and not of ego. It was not like, you know what, now I'm officially going to be the most humble person in the room because I've got no shortcomings, you know, none of that. It was actually because now I can be more of service. It was actually not that I'm better than somebody else. It's that I'm becoming a better version of myself. And I hadn't been a good version of myself in 20-something years. Now, I thought that I was. And if you gave me a lie detector test, I would have passed it. I was great. So I thought. But looking back, that wasn't the case. And then 8 and 9 came, and, you know, I started making this list, and I'm thinking about all these people that I had done harm to and that were these huge deals that I used to avoid. I mean, I was very big, once again, my fear of getting in trouble, my fear of not being good enough. So I would avoid all kind of stuff. In fact, me and my fiance went to a Georgia game this past year, and we walked right past my old fraternity house at 100 miles an hour because I was getting anxious that I was going to see some guys that I knew that I owed amends to, and I was still freaking out about it. But in that case, which happened later on and before, I learned that my selfishness and self-centeredness made me think that all these people I'd done wrong spent their entire day thinking about me the whole time. And I can't believe that Walker guy did this to me, did that. Well, turns out most of them didn't even remember what it was that I was drinking over or did. And the rest of them, now given I did have some bad ones, which were well deserved. But most of them were very happy that I had made a change. That, you know, they knew what was in me and they'd seen what would come out. You know, and then 10, I started on a 10th step a little earlier, but 10 for me, I would sit down at the end of the day, and I didn't write it out like I should have, but I would just go over my day and think, all right, what did you do bad today? Because I used to never think about that. I tried to avoid all this stuff. What could you have done better? But you also have to give yourself some credit. Hey, man, guess what? You didn't drink today. All right, you were polite. You took the grocery cart back. You held the door open. You made your bed. These are all wins. You know, and little wins like that started to add up. You know, did I owe anybody an apology? Instead of avoiding all these things that would build up that make me run past my fraternity house, if I did somebody wrong, I would just go up and apologize and actually mean it. It turns out people know the difference between when you mean an apology and when you don't. 11, conscious contact. My sponsor made it clear the main word, and that was conscious. Right? So if I'm in conscious contact and I'm aware of a power greater than myself all throughout the day, which, by the way, does not happen, but I try, I'm not thinking about myself. And I'm not thinking about woe is me, and I'm not thinking about how I'm figuring all this stuff out. I'm kind of just going with the flow of life, which is what, you know, for me, this whole thing is all about. In step 12, having had a spiritual awakening, you know, he always says, practice these principles in all your affairs. And he always says, all your affairs. You know, it's very easy to practice it when it comes to drinking and when it comes to these rooms. But it takes a lot more work practicing it out there with family, especially coworkers, relationships, etc. But what I've learned is when I'm practicing, and I'm not perfect at it, I mess up every day. But when I'm practicing these principles, all my affairs, and I'm working the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and not Walkers Anonymous, things go better for me. My life's a lot smoother, and all I have to do is follow the principles in this program. So what's it like now? Well, I don't live in irrational fear anymore. Don't get me wrong, I'm still afraid of snakes. I feel like that's a perfectly rational fear. But, you know, I don't have this fear that magically I'm going to get fired. I don't have this fear that everybody I know is going to hate me all of a sudden and leave and abandon me and all this. I don't. I used to live in that fear and try to hide from it. And now I can face things head on. Sometimes it's uncomfortable. Sometimes it hurts. But it's a lot better way of life, at least for me. I hang around good people. You know, I heard, you know, show me who you hang around, I'll show you who you become. All right? So just like back when I was hanging out with people who've shared the same goals as me and the same, kind of lifestyle choices, now I hang around people who I want to be like and who are positive. You know, I have no desire to hang out in the places that I used to hang out. It's not fun to me anymore. My enjoyment, things that I enjoy have changed. And believe it or not, if you do good things, your odds of good things happening are a lot better. All right. I've had zero DUIs. I have not gotten suspended from work for drinking or fired. In fact, I came out of rehab. I had a little construction job, caught my little rehab gig. And then I went into logistics, and now I'm in sales and just slowly, you know, putting one foot in front of the other. My relationships that were so toxic and crazy, I talked to my mom in the morning. She's an alcoholic, so I talked to her before noon because afternoon, blistered. But I talked to her in the morning. She loves her middle of life. You know, hopefully one day, you know, she'll come around. But right now her life's not unmanageable. It's not up to me to make any determination. Friends, I've got a lot of friends in the rooms. It's amazing the relationships that I've built in the rooms are deeper relationships and more meaningful than any relationship I had sitting at the bar. I sat at the same bar stools for 10 years next to some of the same people that I saw every day, and the relationships I have with people in these rooms that I don't even see outside of the rooms is way stronger, way more meaningful than any relationships I had out there. I met my fiance, and believe it or not, practice the principles in all your affairs. It turns out you can have a normal relationship, like a loving, caring one. I can't put into words what this program has given me. I have friends. I have inner peace that's really all that I was looking for. My life had all been chaos, and all I really needed was some peace. I spent years making fun of people who weren't drinking. It was my own insecurities, but it turns out that they had it right the whole time. I wasted decades of my life just chasing after something. And it turns out I found in AA what I was looking for at the bottom of the bottle. And it is a sense of peace. It is a sense of calm. It is a sense of being good enough. It is the ability to have friends. It is the ability to be there as a brother. It is the ability to be there as a fiancé. I'm not perfect. I'm not. I hurt people's feelings. I make mistakes. But I can say that I practice these principles, and I try. And as long as I keep trying and keep trying to get a little bit better each day, and I go to bed at night having not had a drink, then I know I've got a shot to be better the next day. So I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Walker. That was great.
Well, my head was in tomorrow, and my feet followed history. I had an insane notion I could hoodoo everything around me. No. 'Cause too much of everything ain't enough for nothing to me. I got a nudge from the judge, thought it put me in recovery. But the plug.